Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode 9. This week, we'll update you on drafty signings and then have the minor league roundup, followed by The Conversation with Dunedin Blue Jays play-by-play announcer Tyler Murray. So sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. First of all, we've got some breaking news on drafty signings. Some more players have signed, although the draft picks and undrafted free agents are only trickling in with the College World Series still going on. The first two picks in the draft, Clinton Holland, the number two pick, and Phil Bickford, number one, still haven't signed, but there have been some reports of underslot signings in the first 10 picks, which would leave the Jays with about $1 million extra dollars to sign top pick Phil Bickford, as well as one or two of the guys who really slipped down the draft board, like Jake Brents, who the Jays selected in the 11th round, and Rowdy Tellez, a 30th round pick. People say that Brents is the odds-on favorite to get signed of the two. College lefty senior Scott Silverstein was signed and assigned to the Bluefield Blue Jays, as was previously signing righty Brett Barber, catcher Garrett Custins, shortstop Tim LaCastro, and outfielder Jonathan Davis. Recent signees going to Vancouver were catcher Michael Reeves, outfielder Brendan Kalfas, and infielder David Harris, who was just assigned there. The Blue Jays have also announced the signing of the 6'6" son of former Blue Jays star Lloyd Mosby. Lydell is listed as a first baseman, but a little bit of digging tells us that he's played all over the diamond in his high school career and his college career. Mosby, playing at Benedict College, was named to the Division II All-America second team as a shortstop. Mosby's stats are impressive. He hit .418 with 11 home runs in 134 at-bats, and it's kind of surprising that no one drafted him. The Jays also signed 23-year-old right-handed pitcher Kamakani Usui from Vanguard University. The Honolulu native is listed on the MLB.com website as Kamakami, but the only player with a similar name that I could find is always referred to as Kamakani. Kani, as he is called by his college coaches, has played at several colleges, including 3 years at Santa Rosa Junior College and another 2 years at Cal State Los Angeles. Usui wasn't particularly spectacular, having a 4.50 ERA in 80 innings, striking out only 45 and walking 31. And now, the minor league roundup. There's a lot to talk about with two short season teams starting up this week. Starting with the Buffalo Bisons, who have been in a funk lately. They went 2-5 in the last 7 games and fell to .500 at a 36-36 record. They're now 8 games back of Pawtucket in the International League. They've slid so far that the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs have jumped into second place, and the Bisons are only a half game in front of the Rochester Red Wings, who sit right behind the third place Bisons. The biggest excitement for the Bisons coming up is the arrival of Jose Reyes for a rehab assignment this weekend and Star Wars night on Saturday. Second baseman Jim Negrich has been a great example of the Bisons' swoon, hitting over .400 earlier in the year when the Bisons were just destroying all of the pitching in the International League. Negrich is now hitting .338, still pretty good, but over the last month he's only hit .269 with only 5 of his 24 hits going for extra bases, and in the past 7 days he's hit .238 with just 4 singles and a double. Negrich is a veteran minor leaguer who comes from Buffalo, but has never played in the majors despite being drafted out of college in 2006. The New Hampshire Fisher Cats went 1-5 this week, falling to a 33-39 record, good for 5th in the Eastern League Eastern Division. They got beat up by the Erie Seawolves 16-2 on June 15th, but it turned it right around on the back of a strong start by Marcus Stroman and two Adam Loewen home runs to beat up on them 22-1 the very next day. The Fisher Cats have had the Jays' top catching prospect finally return to their lineup last week in A.J. Jimenez. Jimenez went down last year due to a torn elbow ligament that needed Tommy John surgery to repair. Coming back this season, he played a bit rehabbing with the Dunedin Blue Jays and hitting extremely well, and is now back in New Hampshire where he has hit .500 over his first 8 games. Interestingly, his on-base percentage is lower than his batting average. This is due to the fact that he hasn't walked yet, and he's hit 2 sacrifice flies. He has only struck out 5 times in 36 plate appearances and has 6 doubles among his 17 hits. Known primarily for his defense, Jimenez has yet to prove that he can still hit well enough to be an everyday catcher in the big leagues. But if he continues to hit like he has through his first 17 games of ball this year, he could be an eye-opener. The Dunedin Blue Jays won their division for the first half of the season, guaranteeing themselves a spot in the Florida State League playoffs at the end of the year. We have an extended conversation about the DJs with Tyler Murray coming up, so we'll leave the Dunedin talk until then. Listen carefully, though. There's some promising but unconfirmed news coming up in that segment. The Lansing Lugnuts finished their first half with 2 wins and a loss and started the second half with a loss, making that 2-2 over the past week. Dalton Pompey delivered the game-winning hit for the Eastern Division in the All-Star game, while the team lost third baseman Gustavo Pierre due to a promotion to Dunedin. They get shortstop Jason Leblebigian from Vancouver to take his roster spot. Pitcher Roberto Osuna is back from the DL and has been dominant since his return, and Daniel Norris is also on the DL, but we've been informed that it's not a serious injury. Today we'll talk a little bit about starting pitcher Javier Avendaño, who has been somewhat of an enigma this season. He was drafted in the minor league portion of the Rule 5 draft last year by the Blue Jays and was absolutely dominant pitching in relief in Lansing and then as a starter in Vancouver. This season he's been starting exclusively but seems to rely on pinpoint control for his success. His walk rate is somewhat high at 4.0 per 9 innings, and his strikeout rate is down from what it was last season, currently at 7.4 per 9 innings. But he still has the third highest strikeout rate for starters on the staff, lower than Roberto Osuna and Daniel Norris, but higher than Alonso Gonzalez and Taylor Cole. The high walk rate is concerning because Avendaño has been giving up a lot of hits, although his home run rate is very reasonable with only 5 in 67 innings. It's hard to say what Avendaño will do for the rest of the season. Can he find his 2012 self? Or was that pitcher really only effective in relief or starting at a lower level? The Vancouver Canadiens have started their season 4-3 and are second in their division, a game and a half behind the Mariners affiliate, the Everett Aqua Sox. The Canadiens so far have gotten 2 excellent starts from Canadian righty Eric Brown, who was the Blue Jays' final selection in the 50th round of the 2011 draft out of the University of British Columbia. This season marks his 3rd year in Vancouver. His first season, he also got 2 appearances in Lansing, and last season, he made 8 appearances in Lansing, but spent most of the year in a Canadiens uniform. Now 24 and the Canadiens' opening day starter, Brown has thrown 11 2/3 innings this season and has struck out 6 and walked 5, but has only given up 2 runs. He features a high 80s fastball and isn't considered a prospect anymore, but could be a key player for the Vancouver Canadiens team that looks to win the Northwest League Championship for the 3rd year in a row. The Bluefield Blue Jays opened up with a win featuring a solid performance by starter Chase DeJong and an impressive 4 shutout inning outing by Canadian Shane Dawson. I'll update more on them next week as well as have the opening week numbers for the Gulf Coast League Blue Jays, who open up their season tonight. Welcome back to the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'm joined by Tyler Murray, the play-by-play broadcaster for the first half champions of the Florida State League, the Dunedin Blue Jays. Welcome to the podcast, Tyler.
Thanks a lot, Mike. We're very excited for the Blue Jays. Another playoff berth for them, and now it's a matter of keeping consistent the second half and maybe bringing up a championship. But for now, yeah, we're very satisfied with the performance in the first 70 games.
So let's talk about those first 70 games. What were the things that you saw that led to this championship or playoff-bound team?
Well, obviously, a couple of individual performances in the offense that need to be noted. Andy Byrne really paced the Blue Jays offense in every facet of the game, a team-leading 53 RBIs, a 907 OPS, and he's well-deserving of a promotion up to AA New Hampshire. It hasn't gone official yet, but that seems to be the feeling throughout the organization. So if Andy's no longer with us, he's just done a tremendous job. In a limited time, we did have him here in Dunedin. And John Birdie as well, the leadoff hitter, a tremendous job, a FSL leading 30 stolen bases. But I think the thing that got overlooked a little bit was how good the bullpen was for the Blue Jays. They had such a great mix of three really good lefties. Tyler Ibarra, who can throw over 95 miles an hour as a southpaw, had a 17-inning scoreless streak. John Anderson, another lefty, can throw really hard. And then Tony Davis, the submarine lefty, is holding left-handed hitters to a 149 batting average against. So there was a great opportunity for manager Bobby Meacham in his first year to get very creative in the bullpen with a lot of different matchups and scenarios, because his two best righties, Blake McFarland, the closer, who has a league-high 12 saves, at least he did before his injury, but he's back and good to go now for the second half. And then A.J. Meyer, the tall, lanky right-hander, who's got a really impressive 43-4 strikeout-to-walk ratio. I think it was those late leads being held down by the back of the bullpen that really helped the Blue Jays out. And the reason they had those late leads was because of the starters. Scott Copeland, the 25-year-old from White Oak, Texas, actually has the best ERA among any pitcher in the Blue Jays minor league organization at 2.49. So he's been great, a solid guy all season long, and he's just one part of a great rotation. So really, everything came together for the Jays at the right time, including the last four games of the first half. They won them all, and they needed to. So it was a very convincing and very well-deserved championship.
Well, I think you mentioned almost all of the Blue Jays that were a part of the Florida State League All-Star Game. There was Tony Davis, the reliever. Blake McFarland was voted. Did he play? Was he healthy enough to play in the All-Star game?
Yes, he was. He faced two batters in the ninth inning. At that time, the North was out of it. It was 8-1. The South had a pretty impressive fifth inning when they scored five runs. So McFarland faced a couple of hitters. The one All-Star I didn't mention, well, let's go through. We got Andy Burns, Tony Davis, Blake McFarland, and Jesse Hernandez, one of the three Blue Jays starters selected, was there, but he is currently on the disabled list for only a couple more days. And the last guy, Casey Lawrence, made the team as well. He pitched a perfect inning in the All-Star game, and he was the guy who made a quality start yesterday in the first half North Division clinching game. Sixth innings, just three runs allowed, and over his last three innings of work, only allowed one base runner. So he was really impressive, and Lawrence has been up and down all year, but he was one of the happier guys in the clubhouse after the victory because he found what he had been able to do earlier in the season at the exact right time when the Blue Jays needed him most. And he came through in that important, of course, 8-4 victory yesterday because Brevard County, the team in second place, won five straight. They finished just a half game out of first. So just one slip up for the Jays this past week and they wouldn't be celebrating a championship right now in the first half. But fortunately, they were able to get it done.
And they were able to get it done with some help from some sort of unlikely sources, at least one source in particular, and that's Jose Reyes, who began his minor league rehab from his ankle injury with the Dunedin Blue Jays this past week.
Yeah, it was really exciting to have him for three full games against the Tampa Yankees, that were obviously swept by the Blue Jays. He went 5-for-12, so a limited sample size, but that's a .417 batting average. He contributed in a lot of different ways. He looked solid in the field. He had a stolen base, a couple of RBIs, three runs scored in three games, so it was really good to see him at the top of the lineup. It's a pretty solid lineup as it is with John Birdie as the leadoff hitter, but when you move everybody down one because you have a four-time All-Star in your leadoff spot, you know, rehabbing or not, Jose Reyes was really a good guy to have out on the field there to show the winning ways that he's been able to bring to the table in his career. And just to have him in the clubhouse, even celebrating afterwards, he was acting like he'd been part of the team all season. So that was really cool for all the guys and fans to see Reyes, the guy who's obviously had his own successes at the highest stage of baseball, able to show the appreciation, even a couple of levels down below, for how exciting it is to take home a trophy.
Well, that's actually great to hear because sometimes those major leaguers who are sitting in the minors rehabbing, they'll get their hacks in, they'll get their at-bats, their time in the field, or if they're a pitcher, they'll get some innings in, and then they'll leave the ballpark, and then they'll go back to their hotel. So it's great to see someone like Jose Reyes, who stuck around for the celebration afterwards.
Well, you can't say enough about what Jose means to the organization. When you picked him up in the offseason, you just knew that it was going to help out and camaraderie in the clubhouse. And as you know, his first 10 games of the year, he almost hit 400 with 5 stolen bases. He wasn't caught at all. So once they get back him up there in Toronto, everyone's going to be very excited about it. Just the prospect of having him back is going to help these guys out. And up in Toronto, they're doing quite well right now. So it could be perfect timing for a late push as we head to the All-Star break. But when you look at all the celebratory pictures after yesterday's division clinching win, it's Reyes at the top of every picture, right in front, popping all the champagne. So it was really cool to have him around, and he stuck around to sign autographs for fans. Probably our attendance doubled then at home and on the road in Tampa with those 3 games with him there. And he knows, you know, he's an exciting player. He knows he's a popular player, and he is able to use that fame to kind of help out baseball, to kind of talk to more fans, give more autographs, and really not take for granted what he brings to the table. So you're absolutely right, Mike. He's just a great guy to have around.
And there was another player who was rehabbing, you can call it rehabbing, with the Dunedin Blue Jays. He's back now with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, and that's catcher A.J. Jimenez. And what did you see? He tore up the pitching in the Florida State League, which he's also doing in Double A now. What did you see out of A.J. Jimenez that you liked when he was there?
Pretty much everything. Well, first of all, the main thing you hear about A.J., or the first thing anyway, is his defense, probably one of the best defensive catching prospects in the Blue Jays organization, if not the game. But that really all comes naturally to him. You don't even think about him behind the plate in terms of making a bad call or letting one get by him or making a bad throw. So really I focused on him at the plate, and he was incredible. He had 421 in 9 games with 9 RBIs. He had such a huge contribution down the stretch in the playoff push. The second place team with 2 weeks to go was Clearwater. He had a game where he went 4-for-4 with 4 RBIs, and it kind of pushed Clearwater even further back, and they never really recovers. So Jimenez, much like Reyes, when you can add him into an advanced A lineup, it really makes everybody better, not only because you have more solidity down the up and top of the lineup, but he kind of shows what he's been able to do preparation-wise to get everybody set to go. And on the regular roster, we got a guy, Derek Chung, who's been tearing it up. He's a great singles hitter. Only 3 extra base hits this year, but he's hitting 318 in 31 games. I think he took the presence of Jimenez as a bit of a challenge because Chung's a bit of an under-the-radar guy, but he's got a ton of talent behind the plate as well as at the plate. And Jimenez, just a real impressive talent. And I think if he can stay healthy and keep his head right, which he currently is, then he could be up in the bigs in no time just because of the raw talent he has. And as a catcher, you got to be relatively smart to play behind the dish. So you know he's got a good head between his shoulders already.
Well, I've already sort of forecasted that we're going to see A.J. Jimenez in September for sure, because with the designating for assignment of Henry Blanco, he is the third and last catcher on the 40-man roster. So my gut feeling is that he's going to be up in the majors, at least in that third catcher role, to get a taste of it in September once he's finished in Double A, if he spends the rest of the season there.
That's not far-fetched.
And talking about Derek Chung, I mean, he's a friend of Blue Jays from away. We just had our interview with him published on the website just yesterday. So we always wish the best for Derek Chung, and he's hitting up a storm. And it looks like, from what we can see, looking at box scores and looking at defensive statistics, that Derek is a really solid defensive catcher, which is a little bit surprising considering he's fairly new to the position.
Yeah, he's actually throwing out 40% of would-be base stealers now. He hasn't tried, or he hasn't had enough opportunities, I guess, to rank in the FSL's top 10, because you need to be involved in a certain majority of your team's games to have a certain amount of players try to steal on you. But if he had qualified, if he was qualified right now, he'd be second best in the league in terms of throwing guys out behind only Gary Sanchez. I'm sure this is a familiar name to a lot of prospect followers. He's, of course, the number one prospect, according to MLB.com anyway, in the New York Yankees organization. So Derek Chung is right behind him. And he started off a really sluggish, 1 for his first 19. You could tell he was getting frustrated. He spent a little too much time, according to our coaches anyway, in the cage. And once he just settled down and started thinking, you know, I'm a singles hitter, I'm a good contact guy, he just started doing what we know he can do, which is hitting line drives to all fields. And he's pretty quick for a catcher as well. It almost reminds you about the makeup of a guy like Jason Kendall, who can beat out a slow ground ball on the infield if he needs to. And that's actually what Chung did yesterday in the championship clinching game. He had a little dribbler towards third with 2 on and 2 out, and it was a low throw, bounced in, and Chung's speed was able to beat it out. and that allowed two runs to come across. So he really is a well-rounded player, and he missed almost a month on the disabled list with a wrist injury and concussion-like symptoms. And once he came back into the lineup, that's when the four-game winning streak started up, and that's when the five-game losing streak came to an end. So you really can't overlook what Derek Chung's presence has done down the stretch in the first half of the Blue Jays.
Well, that's great. And personally, as a former catcher playing in ball up here in Canada, that I always like to see the catchers making good, and I always like to keep an eye on those guys. Let's go to someone else who is a little bit injured right now, or maybe a lot injured. We haven't really heard anything about his status, and that's Aaron Sanchez. I really have heard, you know, it's been total silence from the Blue Jays about his injury. It's just he's on the DL, and he's been there for quite a while now. So do you have any information about that?
I do, yeah. You asked at the perfect time. We do like to keep things under wraps here in case misinformation comes out. But as of right now, and you know, not completely committal to it, but according to the rotation, according to what I've heard from people in the organization, Aaron Sanchez is going to start this series. He's going to start tomorrow, Friday night, if we can get the game. And it's a little stormy here in Daytona, but he's been good to go. At least he feels ready to go. But of course, you want to keep things as slow and careful as possible. Only really expecting him to throw maybe 35 pitches or maybe two or three innings to get him slowly back to perfect health. But he's been throwing a lot lately, feeling a lot better. And the original target was right before the All-Star game or right afterwards. But we're now only just 4 days after the All-Star break, which is, of course, last weekend in Dunedin. So it's good to see or at least hear that Sanchez is going to be back and ready to go. However, it's going to be in limited sample sizes. But, of course, with the young top prospects, any injury can kind of make your heart skip a beat a little bit, so it's really good news to hear that he is at least scheduled for now to be starting tomorrow. But again, we can't 100% commit to that just because of, you know, the fluidity of these situations. But yeah, the bottom line is we're excited to have him back.
Sure. And was there any detail about what kind of injury he did suffer?
Nothing too specific, just maybe a little strain on the shoulder, something that just needs to be taken with extreme caution. So he's just really working back into it, getting himself back to 100%, because, of course, you don't want to go out there if you're not completely confident that you can do what you need to do, because Sanchez, in his last start, before hitting the DL, was only hitting 92, 93 on the radar gun at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium, which almost always registers 97, 98 for its heater. So something wasn't right, and hopefully he's back to normal now.
Absolutely, and you know, with Sanchez coming back, that's some more good news for Blue Jays prospect watchers, especially since the number two ranked prospect, Roberto Osuna, has rejoined the Lansing Lugnuts and has shown absolutely no signs that he missed any time whatsoever. He's been outstanding in his two starts so far.
That's great news as well, and it's interesting. A lot of fans, and reasonably so, thought the prospect's ability and talent overall was going to drop down with all the big trades in the offseason. You lost Noah Syndergaard to the Mets, Anthony Desclafani to the Marlins, and Justin Nicolino to the Marlins. And those three guys all made the All-Star team here in the Florida State League this year, so they all got to play the All-Star game at the ballpark that they would have been this year if not for those big offseason trades up in Toronto. So it was a little bittersweet to see those guys again in Dunedin. But you look at guys like Ozuna, you look at guys like Sanchez, and even Daniel Norris, who's come on a little bit lately, there is very much still a good presence of pitching in this organization. And you just look at the recent success all the different minor league teams have had, and A-ball on down. I mean, Lansing was great last year, Vancouver tremendous as well, and another playoff berth for the Dunedin Blue Jays. There's definitely still some talent here, and it's good to hear Ozuna is back to full health and not showing any signs of that surgery, or rather just the injury, and no surgery required.
Absolutely. At this point, I think the Jays are going to keep a close eye, obviously, on everybody. And we do want to send a congratulations out to Anthony Desclafani, who, from what I've heard, was just promoted to AA. So he's moving up through the Miami Marlins organization.
Yes, that's right. Actually, a lot of his former teammates are here with us in Dunedin right now, and they're all saying it's very well deserved. We only saw him once, and that was obviously a lot of fun for our guys. It was one of two times that they got a face-off against one of their former teammates. Noah Syndergaard from the St. Louis Mets came to town, and Andy Burns actually went 3-for-4 the home run off of him. And it's no surprise why, because he seems to have his number. He knows how the guy pitches. And, you know, Desclafani is definitely a great talent. And in the Miami Marlins organization, you know, there's really no need for patience with those youngsters. They can bring them on up. I can think of one guy, Marcell Ozuna, who was a Jupiter Hammerhead just last year, and I think he's in cleanup right now at Marlins Park. So they're not shy about bringing their guys up. And you know, a lot of these young pitchers have been down at A-ball for a while, so it'll be a great chance to see what they can do at the higher level.
Absolutely. Let's go back over to the hitting for a little bit. There's one player in particular. There's several players I want to talk to you about, but one player in particular who has hit very well this year, and especially compared to what he did last year, and that's Mike Krause. And he's obviously Canadian outfielder. I think he's been playing a lot in right field, if I'm not mistaken. And he seems to be hitting very well. He's got a 280 average, a 357 OBP. And he seems to be hitting a lot of doubles, but the home runs aren't coming for him. Do you think that it's just a matter of getting back into the swing of things after an injury, finding that groove, and the ball will start to travel a little more off his bat?
Yeah, I think the reason he's hitting so well right now is that he's not so much worried about hitting home runs anymore. Obviously, down the road, I want to get back to that, but as you said, 11 doubles for him, a lot of line drives into the gap, a lot of high fly balls near the wall as well have resulted in some of those doubles, but he really is a complete player, Michael Krause, and despite his struggles last season because of injuries, and of course he's had been a little banged up this season as well, but Krause really is a five-tool guy, and he's actually been moved to center field as of late. He did start in right field when he came back off the disabled list, but he's a great center fielder, a very good arm, and he's 6'4", over 200 pounds, so when he moves out there, it doesn't look like he's moving too fast, but because he's so long, he just glides into the alleyways and takes away a lot of extra base hits. So he's been a great presence out in center field, and he's so big and so strong that it's only a matter of time before the power numbers come back. But as I said, shooting for home runs, I think, might have been his problem a little bit, maybe earlier in the season than last year, because there were a lot of pop-ups, a lot of flyouts. Now he's hitting line drives back up the middle over the shortstop set, and unlike maybe some less strong hitters, when he hits one over the shortstop set, it's not just a single, it shoots all the way down into the left center field wall. So the power is obviously there for him, just a matter of maybe elevating a bit more, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it, I think. He's been great this year.
Right, and I actually saw him taking batting practice a couple times in spring training, and it did surprise me how big he is. And it also surprised me that looking at him in comparison to most of the batters that I saw in spring training who are now on the Dunedin Blue Jays, he had the most raw power out of everybody. The ball just jumped off his bat. So if it's right now, it's just a matter of him not trying to elevate the ball, trying to hit hard line drives, that I would agree with you that I could see the power numbers climbing as he plays more and gets more comfortable.
Yeah, we've got three Canadians on the ball club. One of them is our hitting coach, Stubby Clapp. The other one is, besides the Vancouver native Krause, is the Toronto kid, Marcus Connect. So both Krause and Connect have a ton of power, and it's been a lot of fun to have those three guys aboard, especially because they all played and coached together as part of the Canadian Pan Am Championship team. So they know what it takes to win, and there's a lot of raw talent, you're right, within Marcus Connect and Michael Krause, who both right now are swinging very hot bats, which is great, because they're in the 5, 6, or 7 spots in the order right now. We'll see what happens with the likely promotion of Andy Burns. But to have that ability down to the bottom half of your order, that's just part of the consistency that this lineup has been able to put together, and that's a big reason why they're first-half champs.
Right, and I think the offense is definitely, especially if Andy Burns gets promoted, the offense, I think, is definitely one of the areas of concern where the home run leader outside of, well, Burns is second on the team in home runs, but the home run leader is Casey Hobson with 10 home runs, and the next person after Burns is Marcus Connect with 5, and it sort of goes down. I mean, it looks like this team is really a singles-doubles team with a couple of guys who can really hit the ball out of the park, but it really looks like it's built as a team for extended rallies, and guys will come up and, you know, exchange places with somebody on second base with a double.
Yeah, you're right. And this team didn't wait around for those big home runs down the stretch when they needed 4 straight wins, and they delivered on that need. Really, a lot of 2-out rallies were put together for them that ended up being the difference in the first half division standings. Burns, obviously, is a great guy. He can leave the ballpark at any point, but he's a great situational hitter as well. And I think having Bobby Meacham as a manager has been a huge help for the Blue Jays this year, not because of his calming presence and easygoing, but still, when necessary, authoritative manner. The fact that he was a small ball player when he played for the New York Yankees for 6 years in the 80s, he actually led the American League in sacrifice hits 1 year, and then the next year he led the majors in sacrifice hits, so he knows the benefits of small ball. And He's very aggressive at third base, sending guys around. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But there have been so many rallies with multiple guys on base this year. It happens for every team, but the Blue Jays, as of late, have gotten it done when they've needed to get it done. And there's, because I don't think they have that one go-to guy where they say, okay, this guy can hit a home run for us, we need it right now. They just take it one at-bat at a time, and they keep that carousel going, bring run after run in. And it's really been an impressive offensive output as of late, just because they're not sitting around waiting for the big fly.
Right, and you can see that with the number of stolen bases the team has. Andy Burns with 21 and John Birdie with 30. Jonathan Jones, before he was on the DL, he only had 78 at-bats, but he has 8 stolen bases. So you can see that the team is running, and running effectively for the most part.
Oh, yeah, they do their homework, too. Stanley Clapp always wants to know how the opposing catchers have done this season and throughout their career in terms of throwing guys out. And I gave him a couple of scouting reports from the Fort Myers Miracle. They've got a guy, Matt Coach, who's throwing everybody out, but he says, whatever, we'll run anyway. So it's pretty impressive, the fact that these guys aren't really intimidated by any of the other catchers in the league. You can probably tell they're trying to lead the league in stolen bases. They don't right now, but just the individual talent up and down the lineup and the roster, it almost seems like they're challenging themselves in that stolen base race. And I think Andy Burns has developed his speed a little bit more this year, maybe gotten smarter on the base paths. And with an aggressive manager like Bobby Meacham and Stubby Clapp, the first base coach and hitting coach, there's almost always a green light if they want it.
Right, and I think I saw a tweet that you sent out to one of my comrades, one of the other bloggers, about the Blue Jays, who asked you about Andy Burns, if he was really super fast to get all of his 21 stolen bases, and you said that he was probably a 7.5 out of 10 in speed, but a 9.5 out of 10 when it came to assessing his chances of success and his base running skills.
Absolutely, and I don't know where it came from. I heard last year, I was saying, you know, he hit for a lower average, he stole less bases, but I think with the confidence he's gained at the plate, hitting a lot of balls out of the ballpark, knocking in runs, just being placed as a three-hitter when the season started, I think the confidence overall has been growing, and Andy Burns has been a key for him and his success throughout the year. He's made a lot of great base-running plays throughout the year, not just stealing bases, but tagging up when the time is right, not going for third on the ground ball to the left side. It sounds like easy stuff, but there are so many young guys here in this league, and Burns is 22, which I guess for a prospect is a little bit old, but still, he's really showing maturity and wisdom beyond his years, so he definitely deserves all the accolades and all the praise he's been getting.
Well, let's wrap up our discussion with Andy Burns, and now that we've talked about him quite a bit, he's hitting .327. He's taken 25 walks, which is second on the team, actually, to Peter Mooney. But he strikes out very infrequently. He steals bases. He's got 8 home runs and 5 triples to go with his 15 doubles. Is there anything he doesn't do?
Well, let's see. No, he does it all. He does it all quite well. I think the only maybe knock on him is occasionally, on tough hops at third base, which happen a lot, instead of maybe putting the body in front of the ball down the line, we'll try to scoop it on the backhand, and 85% of the time he gets it done, and it's a great highlight play, and he has a wonderful arm. He can just throw bullets across the diamond, but for a lot of young guys with hard hit balls down the line, it's tough to move your body over there in time and really have the courage to knock it down with your torso, and more instinctively so. You stick the leather out, most of the time you can get it, but maybe that's one thing to work on for Burnsy, but we've been very, very impressed with him so far here in Dunedin, and it's really hard to pick out a hole in his game right now.
Well, that's fantastic, and you know, while it would be bad for the Dunedin Blue Jays, I hope that he's promoted soon, because I'm headed to New Hampshire to see the Fisher Cats in about a week and a half, so I'm hoping he's there by the time I get there, but that would definitely create a hole for someone else to fill for the Dunedin Blue Jays going forward in the second half.
Yeah, I've got a feeling you may get to check him out, but no, we cannot confirm anything right now. I can say that if, you know, there wasn't, I guess if I was making the decision, I would have sent him up after a month, just because of how well he was hitting. But if he's still going to be here, we'll take it. We'll be absolutely to have him here for as long as we can. But for your sake, I hope we get to see him up in New Hampshire.
Absolutely, but also I think you guys are glad he stuck around for the first half, because he really was the key contributor throughout the first half and leading into that first half championship for the Dunedin Blue Jays.
That's right, that's right. The Booster Club in Dunedin at Floyd Auto Exchange Stadium does a Player of the Month award as well. And I believe he's won each of the first two now, and I'm sure even if he's not here for the end of June, he might win that month as well. So he's definitely been the face of the offense so far. But when you look up and down the lineup, he's just really doing his best to keep up with everybody else who's been contributing, getting on base for him, and then knocking him in on the back end. So it's really worked out well this half.
Well, that's fantastic, and we'll let you go because I know you guys have a game tonight, but congratulations to the Dunedin Blue Jays, the North Division first half champion of the Florida State League, and we'll wrap it up with Tyler Murray, the play-by-play announcer for the Dunedin Blue Jays.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Keep up the great work.
That wraps it up for episode number 9 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Tyler Murray, play-by-play voice for the Dunedin Blue Jays, for joining me from Florida, and thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @JaysFromAway. Come on back next week and go Jays go!